Shit, Bob. Hello, everybody. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Craig. Hope everybody's doing well. Thank you again for the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope regarding Alcoholics Anonymous, and specifically in relation to the 12 traditions and how it's outlined in the book Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. I just want to encourage folks. I know you guys had a sharing session last week. I know we had some questions the previous weeks. If you have any questions, fire them away now, during the session, and you know, whenever you feel moved. But I want your questions to kind of guide and direct the way we go. I will be basing all my discussions based on my experience and how it pertains to literature. Some of it might not be line by line or exact quotes, but everything we're doing is we're going through this. The first couple of weeks, I kind of just went through the history, which, if you have a book, comes of age. And if somebody doesn't know how to get a hold of one, please put that in the ask it basket, or please ask your District 6 literature committee. I'm sure they can help you with that. But when you look at page 79 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age up until page 97, a lot of that kind of talks about the history of the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, the history of the Second Legacy, the way Alcoholics Anonymous started in various cities throughout the world. You know, fascinating stories we touched on, like a couple went to Ireland and helped start Alcoholics Anonymous there, even though they were thinking they were going there for vacation. We talked about someone finding a book at the bottom of a 55-gallon drum and helped create Alcoholics Anonymous in Alaska. We talked about a bartender in Chicago who was not even an alcoholic, but would help carry the message to the alcoholic who came to the bar. And we talked about the mistakes we made. We talked about all that kind of stuff. But all of that's necessary. And something you hear me often say is service and recovery are not separate. These principles, in my experience, all 36 of them have the problem and the solution in the same capacity. If your experience is similar to mine, as you went through the book, the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it was imperative, it was important, it was necessary to be hopeless. Without becoming hopeless, there was no opportunity for me to go through the rest of the steps, because as long as I think I have some sort of hope, or I have some sort of control, or I have some sort of handle on my alcoholism, I'm not interested in help. And in a way, the first couple of weeks and back and forth through these following weeks, I kind of want you to be hopeless about the existence of Alcoholics Anonymous without these 12 principles. That's my experience, so that's what I want to share with you. It's interesting because we do see a lot of apathy in AA, and it's normally mimicked or parallel rather with either misinformation or lack of information regarding our history or regarding our traditions. Whenever we have a problem come up in Alcoholics Anonymous, we should be able to resolve it with these principles. And in this turn would be the 12 traditions. When you look at page 97 of the book, A Comes of Age, just as we were leaving page 96, where it talks about the 12 traditions being vital principles, talks about this being the survival of Alcoholics Anonymous, depending on it, talks about all the little, you know, kind of like in the preface of the big book, all the little points of why they're so important. It brings us to the idea of a group inventory. So just understand, if you participate in an AA group and, you know, because we get the question all the time. Now, I'm certainly into pioneering new thought. I'm certainly into empowering the individual, not to talk as much as they live the message, but I'm certainly have experience with helping create change in a group, is what I'm trying to say. But I think it's important not to just go into the group and wave a flag and be the point of every piece of change, but to also suggest that we come together and do that through a group inventory. We come together and look at where we're at with respects to our 12 traditions, look at where we're at with respects to A as a whole and how we're participating in the community and stuff of that sort. All of that really brings us to the common welfare and tradition one. The short form, if you remember a couple weeks ago, I talked about, I really prefer the long form. It's a lot more explicit. The short form of tradition one says our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Sounds pretty interesting. Sounds like it kind of makes sense, right? When we look at the long form of tradition one that says each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. If we just take the snapshot of the truth right now, the humility which sits in front of us with the however many people we have here tonight, this tradition suggests for those of you that are here and identify as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, we are but a small part of a great whole. Which really makes me think about responsibility. And pardon the word, but duty. My duty to AA. My gratitude to AA. I was taught gratitude is an action word. I like using the lines. I'm a poet, so I kind of threw a little bit of a different set of words, but a small part of a huge piece necessary for a great whole. Because you're not wiggling out of this one if you and I are in the same room. Whether you have a huge ego and think you're big, you still belong here. We want your ideas. Or whether you think you're really small and you got nothing to offer, we still want to hear your experience. Because that's literally what creates the equality. The two biggest cement factors for equality, outside of the obvious, we both suffer from alcoholism and we both have a solution to alcoholism. The two biggest cemented factors is anonymity and the altruism of the common welfare. Those make us equal. When we're focused on those, it doesn't matter how tall, how short, what color, what island, what state, what country, etc. And that kind of puts us on a common journey with a common focus and you know, the common peril and the common solution. So each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. So that means we are all a part of AA if we are designating ourselves as members of AA. Sure, you have the right to not participate. I'm not saying you're not a member if you don't participate. But I'm laying out principles the same way I would lay them out with respects to the steps. You have every right not to do the 12 steps, but if you want what we have, here's what we've done. And this is our shared experience. AA must continue to live or most of us will surely die. That's where it gets interesting. Because I don't identify with someone who does not think that AA must continue to live or will die. I will die without AA. I know some people think that sounds a little like martyrdom or kind of like, oh yeah, I know that was probably the case in 1939, but not in 2024. And again, we're all entitled to our opinions. It's just kind of what AA is though, you know? It's very interesting to me for the member that doesn't feel they need to be here. I like to have conversations with them to find out why. I love sponsees in Alcoholics Anonymous because they help me stay sober. And when sponsees don't work the program, then I start to think I'm special. Well, how come I got this thing? They don't need to work it. And by the way, by special, I don't mean like better than, I mean like special, you know what I mean? So like it's important for us to be connected. In 2024, it gets interesting, right? I think there's a lot of changes in the world and in AA that are absolutely necessary. But I also don't think we got to put the white gloves on all the time. It's okay to be direct and honest. Like the alcoholic loves the truth, even while they're active. It just has that certain ring to it, right? These principles really bring about truth for me. I can't argue them, even if I wanted to. Hence, our common welfare comes first. So if we believe that each member of AA has a role in AA, see, that's a very interesting statement because we say all these things all the time. Sometimes we spoil the prize. I remember when I was first getting sober, at every meeting I went to where I was, we read how it works. We read how it works. We read how it works. You heard it so much like it didn't even really have power to you anymore. You know what I mean? Like you didn't even realize what it was until you took time to go through the book with your sponsor and kind of pause and you got introduced to that idea of meditation. Then you're like, wow, that stuff is like really potent. When I was reading how it works, I was feeling bad for you guys. I was like, man, I feel bad for these people. Not even realizing it was me that we're talking about. Same thing when we read this. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. That encompasses the entirety of AA. That means you are welcome here if you are alcoholic. You are welcome to participate in a group. You are welcome to participate in the steps, traditions, concepts, the service structure. You're welcome to listen. You're welcome to share. But most importantly, you are welcome to participate in the movement that is AA. Otherwise, we die. I know, like, again, in 2024, like, how dare I say we might die if we don't work this program? And I guess I'll just keep it to me, because that's always the safest thing when we just share our own experience, because you can't really argue with someone's experience. You could certainly argue with quote unquote opinions, but not with shared experience. And that's my experience. I would either be dead or I would definitely be walking dead. And I know the real alcoholic in this room understands what I mean by that. And it might even be worse to be walking dead. So the common welfare comes first. So we make decisions as a whole, but we make decisions based on these principles as a whole together. That's the root of number one. Just like the root of the first step is conceding to our innermost self that we were powerless, that we were alcoholic, that our life had become unmanageable, that we can never safely drink again. The same potency is in the tradition, in my experience, tradition one, that our common welfare comes first. And how do you even start that discussion? What does that even mean? Because again, we throw that term around all the time. What does a common welfare mean? Just that it was a 10-9 vote? Absolutely not. 10-9 has nothing to do with the common welfare. In fact, it's probably inconsiderate of the common welfare. With that being said, individual welfare follows close afterward. What it's really asking me to do is to lay aside personal ambitions, lay aside the need to be in charge, the need to control, open my mind to what you might have to share. And again, what really guides that discussion is when each of us are sharing our experience versus lecturing. Each of us are sharing our experience versus pointing the finger. Each of us are sharing the experience, because it kind of just creates that opportunity to just open our mind a little more. Because if that is your experience, then I can hear that. It says on page 97, in A Comes of Age, in the first, second line of the first paragraph where it starts to talk about tradition one, probably no society sets a higher value on the personal welfare of the individual member than does AA. But long ago, we found that the common welfare had to come first. And I read that line because we're not just spitting the individual out and saying, you know, common welfare, common welfare. It's very close afterward. But it's also the way I read tradition one. Tradition one doesn't say, but the person with 2 days comes, you know, closely afterward. It doesn't say the person with 30 years. It's the alcoholic. The most important person in the room, in my experience, is the alcoholic. Because just as desperate as the person is with 2 years, just as desperate is the person walking off the ledge with 30 years. And if you're new here, I'm letting you know, with even over 25 years sober, I need to work the same program you do. I need to try to embrace these traditions just as well as anyone else in this room. I need the humility. I need the sacrifice. It's another key word for tradition one, sacrifice. We think sacrifice and we think, you know, putting some money in the basket, or we think like, oh, I didn't get to watch my show tonight. For me, the sacrifice that we're talking about in AA is literally all about me laying aside my pride. It doesn't even have much to do. I mean, closely following that is time. But don't forget, that's an oxymoron, because when I'm giving my time, I'm really getting way more than I'm giving. You know, whether you put me in the opportunity to share my experience, or you're sponsoring me, or I'm sponsoring you, it's kind of a mutual win-win. Closely afterward. And we talked about the other week, like, if you know the story about Eddie Rickenbacker and being lost at sea, like, that's what we are. We're in the same boat trying to survive till we get to shore. No food, out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you guys, somebody in here is a scientist, between the salt water and the sunshine and all that. Like, it's very dangerous conditions, right? Well, so is alcoholism. There's miracles here every day. People love writing books about things that are happening in the world. I walk softly, quietly, humbly, and anonymously, and I see people being saved every day. Unfortunately, I also see people dying. So this thing is real. Most of us will surely die. AA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. I am definitely in the most of us. Some of you may not, but I will. Call me fanatical, radical, embatical, sabbatical, whatever you want to call me. I definitely believe that without Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm nothing. And that's not a play. I don't consider myself weak. I don't think I don't have my own thoughts. I don't think that I don't make my own decisions. I'm just saying without the help and the opportunity to have found a power greater than myself and participate in this movement, I definitely would not be here. When you look down to the last line of that first paragraph on page 97, it says, they had been saved from death, but found themselves still floating upon a dangerous sea. I love that because it's foreshadowing what we're doing with respect to the traditions. The fact that we are here, regardless of where you're at in your sobriety, we've been saved for death, saved from death, whether it's for 24 hours, for 25 years, whatever it is. But there's still more. There's more to come. There's more to do because we're still floating upon this dangerous sea of alcoholism. There was no doubt in their minds that the common welfare came first. Nobody dared rock the raft lest they all perish. We have interesting sayings in AA, like especially in the service structure. Oh, don't worry, like because we don't want to have to speak up because we're afraid what people think, and we don't want to, pardon the expression, rock the boat, because it just said don't rock the boat. So actually, it doesn't really help my point here. But we're afraid to rock the boat a little by sharing things that are controversial, and you know, it's so important to participate. Because without breaking through that conflict, without having that conversation, those discussions, we don't learn. We don't hear from each other. We don't know each other's experience. We don't know what your group's doing if you don't share or talk with us. We don't have the ability to help somebody who's French-speaking when you're a French-speaking group, but we didn't even know you existed because you didn't have a general service representative. Or if there's, if you meet in a church and there's not a relationship with the pastor or the news bulletin, and you haven't let those parishioners know where AA is and where to find AA and how to get involved, those are like little things that have to do with the common welfare. Thinking bigger picture, thinking outside of ourselves, not just on an individual level, but even as a group. Because the group could be just as selfish as the individual. If we're not considering how to contribute to AA as a whole, to the community, and I don't mean community in case there's people new here. I'm not talking about going to the soup kitchen and you know, feeding the homeless. Not that any of that is bad. It's just not our mission. What I mean by the community is letting the community know where AA is, what AA does, what it doesn't do, you know, all that kind of stuff. And groups can participate in that. They can be involved in that. It starts by having a GSR, starts by having these discussions in the group. I always say you open the envelope, especially a flesh and blood group, by having the shades on the wall. Steps, traditions, and concepts. That just starts discussion. Just starts discussion. It's a couple of dollars. Or else they all perish. And we tell people in a lazy way, don't worry, they'll rotate. They can't destroy AA. Absolutely. You have the ability to harm AA. Absolutely, you have the ability to harm AA as a whole. No, I don't think you as one person is going to destroy AA, but absolutely, you can get in the way of the message being there. You can get in the way of the communication being there. You can get in the way of the common welfare and the altruistic movement. I can. The bottom of 97, just before it gets to the last paragraph, it says, slips are very serious difficulty, but as a group, we take them in stride. Again, it's important the group survives. It doesn't mean we're cold to the individual, but it's important a group survives or else we all perish. There's no point in everybody going down. I've done enough group inventory. It's probably over 150 in my AA experience, my time in AA, and one that comes up a lot with respects to the common welfare and is like when there's an individual who is kind of inappropriate, whether it be via violence or sexually inappropriate or whatever. And there's always a discussion, do we have the right to kick him out of AA? And in my experience, no, you don't have the right to kick them out of AA, but you do have the right as a group to collectively come together and consider the common welfare and maybe ask so-and-so to be on a probationary period before they come back. Because if you keep distracting from the primary purpose, if the cops have to keep being called, if somebody feels unsafe so they don't want to come to the group, that's affecting the common welfare. Now, while that does happen in AA, I think the bigger distractions of the common welfare are self-appointed leaders that create self-imposed crises that try to bring their demands into AA. And I'm trying to be careful here. There's no way to put it. I mean, I'm not on a mountaintop. I'm on earth with everyone else. But there's individuals that try to kind of say AA is wrong. With it, like having a conversation about that is fine. But why? Anyway, I'll leave it at that. We also talk about in the common welfare, the, romance and sex. I remember I was a member of a group years ago, one of the largest groups I was a member of. And it was so cool to see there was a husband and wife in the group and they both participated. And sometimes they disagreed and they had even a little bit of arguments during the business meeting. But after the business meeting, they were still happily married. They were still engaged in the steps. You know, so-and-so sponsored a bunch of women. So-and-so sponsored a bunch of men. It was pretty cool to watch. I've also been a member of groups where, you know, adultery or inappropriateness, nothing that has to do with AA, but kind of invades the group. And this is why it's important to know our principles, because if individuals decide to engage in behaviors on their own time, that's their business. That still shouldn't invade the strength of the group. Of course, we still want to be there and pick them up and share our experience of how we get through breakups or how we make amends or, you know, correct our behaviors or whatever, but it's really not our job to get involved. But there's human beings in AA. I know it's hard to believe, but there's human beings in AA. And sometimes when that kind of stuff happens, people feel like they got to pick sides. You know, if you have Joe and Jessica and everybody knows Joe and Jessica, and Jessica sponsors a bunch of the women and Joe sponsors a bunch of the guys, and all of a sudden there's a nasty breakup, that can affect the group. All of those are outside issues, but still realistically, they can affect the group. But this is why it's so important to have a foundation of principles to focus on and to stay pointed towards. Going over into page 98, and this is one of the questions I always ask, and I brought this up the other week, my sponsees and people I work with in A Comes of Age, does sex divide you? And you should ask yourself honestly if sex divides you, not just sex like intercourse, but sex like gender. Those are questions you should ask yourself. Am I accessible to the group as a whole? Am I willing and able to participate or help or answer a call or make a call or whatever? I just want to check in with Brooke real quick. Is there any questions?
Yes, I do have one. Can you elaborate on, you said that pride was the ultimate sacrifice, and somebody wants to know if you can elaborate on that a little bit more.
Yeah, so what I mean by that is for me, whenever it asks us to be self-sacrificing or tradition one asks us to, you know, sacrifice personal ambitions for the good of the whole, and what I'm saying is my pride, because it's so large, my ego can be so big, my arrogance can be so dominating. Those are the actual things that I need to sacrifice, being in charge, being in control. I don't really feel like I've sacrificed money with AA. Like I said, I don't feel like I've sacrificed time, even though I've given a lot of time. I don't feel like that's the sacrifice. I feel like the sacrifice that I give is letting go of control, not needing to be, you know, in charge, but facing that pride. Again, service and recovery are not separate. I don't have any shot at that if I'm not working the steps. Just another perspective. Sacrifice can mean something else for anyone else in this room, but the thing that really hits me on the spiritual side of AA is sacrificing my own self-centeredness is really what's being sacrificed. I've always loved, I remember when we took a 14-hour drive in a blizzard to go to a service assembly in Buffalo from down by New York City. And we had like 11 guys, and it's normally that ride's a little less, but it was insane. But we went there, and there were still 700 people talking about how we can carry the message more effectively in Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember my first group inventory. I guess I have some affinity with snow and God, but my first group inventory, again, there was another blizzard. And our group spent 4 hours trying to figure out how we can more effectively carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel really good in this world when myself and my home group gather together for the common welfare and what we can do to best help the alcoholic who enters our doors, and what we can best do to participate in the structure of AA as a whole. And when we challenge each other, you know, we used to call it spiritual calisthenics, you know, stretching it out just a little bit spiritually. I really identify with the alcoholic that enjoys that. I have no connection with the AA member that thinks AA is boring or thinks that service is stupid. I just don't. I don't mean that in any sort of way. And I'm also not challenging someone's experience. Maybe they were part of a really boring district. I don't know. But I'm just saying I don't identify with that, because ever since I've gone through the steps, I kind of think maybe if I'm bored, I'm the boring one, you know, like that kind of stuff. So there's, but again, all of this comes through on the common welfare. Any other questions, Brooke?
Yeah, I have another one. If a business meeting chairperson can't control the meeting, like people talking over each other, as a member, am I responsible to speak up?
So my answer to that would be, hopefully the group conscience guides the business meeting. And hopefully the chairperson is strong enough to help reference and knows the guidelines within the group and the group conscience. And then, yes, I would say if I'm a member of a home group and we're out of order, I would be calling point of order. And I would say we're off track here. Again, going back to the phrase, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. Now, there's some interpretation there. I don't just walk into somebody's business meeting that I've never participated in and start telling them how to do it. I just want to make sure that's not what I'm suggesting. But we are all responsible for AA. We're all responsible to learn our history, learn our steps, learn our traditions or concepts, and especially within our group. If we're going outside of the group conscience, I'm not talking about monitoring an individual's behavior, but if we're going outside of group conscience, it's not even our right, it's our responsibility. And you'll find that on the next workshop in the concepts. When you look at some of those concepts, it's literally our responsibility to speak up to that. But even before the responsibility to speak up, I mean, how many times have you heard a secretary? Poor secretary spent 2.5 hours getting all the minutes together. And if you're OCD like me and Leslie, you want to make sure it's all perfect and everything's great. And then you spend all this time and you put it in front of the group. And anybody's like, got any questions? Everybody's like, no, you know what I'm thinking. You didn't read them. Because no matter how good the minutes are, you know you got a question. And what's the first thing an alcoholic does when they read the minutes? Well, if they read the minutes. They go right to their section. They want to see if their report was written right. They want to make sure anything they said was good. Well, that's cool. And then you just use the common welfare and read the rest of the minutes, you know? But that's just a perfect point. If we're not going to take the time to learn about our group's guidelines, if we're not going to take the time to raise our hand and ask questions, then we don't get to grow. Apathy is a huge, huge, trying to think of a different word, than cancer. It's a huge problem in AA because it really takes us away, again, from the altruism. If we don't ask questions, we don't grow. You know what I tell my friends all the time? Like, they sometimes get mad at me, my sponsees and my friends. I'm sure you guys can figure this out about me. They get mad at me because I ask so many questions. And then I always tell them, I'm like, if you don't ask questions, then I feel like you don't care. It talks about in page 98 As we're going into some more stuff about the common welfare, whole groups got into uproars and a number of people got drunk. They're talking with respects to romance and relationships. There was some throwings of rocks at the sinners. We trembled for AA's reputation and it's for survival. Now, I like that line because while I don't think if you want to do whatever you do professionally outside of AA, whether you're a teacher, a lawyer, a doctor, a professional baseball player, a sex worker, whatever, all of those people are welcome in AA. Like, that's not what I'm concerned about with AA's reputation, but I am concerned when we're inside of an AA group and how we behave with the facility we rent space from, or when we're a district and we're facilitating a workshop in the public, or we're a committee and we're going into the prison or the treatment center. All of those can affect the common welfare. So it's another example of how you can hurt AA as a whole on your behavior. And this is why I take things very seriously before we elect individuals. District, you love to just go to the area and say, we've elected everybody. Like it's a checklist. I don't want to elect everyone unless they're qualified. I don't want unqualified people doing public information work. I don't want people that are unqualified to speak to people that are coming to AA for the first time to speak. I would rather it be empty. Now, I'm just one person. Even though you've asked me to do a workshop, please don't take my word as the law. But I'm just saying in my experience, I wouldn't want that. I would stand up in front of the district. And sometimes we don't know that we could do this. And I would say, you know, point of order, I'm opposed to this election because this individual has 30 days and clearly doesn't understand our history and traditions, and not a personal attack. I mean, who knows all that at 30 days? Nobody does. But again, it's about the common welfare. You want to know why the common welfare is so important? Because it takes out the ego, and then you and I aren't fighting. If Brooke disagrees with me right now and Brooke thinks, well, 30 days is fine, I think 30 days isn't, we go with the common welfare, which is the guidelines say they should have 2 years. So then it's not about me fighting Brooke. That's why these principles are so useful. Because they remove the alcoholic home that we grew up in. The dishonesty, the self-centeredness, the lack of communication, the manipulation, the control. The problem centers in the mind. Even at a district meeting. And that's what this does. The common welfare allows us to consider that. They made a reference to the family groups here, which we cooperate. If you look at AA guidelines, which is a very interesting part of our AA.org website, and there's a whole bunch of different ones that you could look at. But if you look at the one that talks about AA's relationship with Al-Anon, you'll see at the very back of the service piece where it talks about in 19... either 59 or 69, my memory's going these past couple weeks, but where we decided that we have a special relationship with Al-Anon, unlike any other 12-step organization. And the reason I say that is because we cooperate with Al-Anon. We cooperate with them very well. We don't affiliate. The money stays separate. The name stays separate. But if you go to an international AA convention, the family groups are invited there. If you go to an Al-Anon international convention, they invite AA. I've served at 4 general service conferences. I've served as a delegate, chairperson of various regional events, yada, yada, long resume. But the point I'm saying is all through those roles, AA has cooperated with Al-Anon. There's been an opportunity to work. And it's actually really effective, I don't want to say combating, but going against alcoholism in the community, not just as a service committee, and not just as a convention or an area, but even as an individual, because you make relationships and all of a sudden their friends like want to get well and now they have a connection with you, so they send their friends to you. Or all of a sudden I know someone that could use Al-Anon or Alateen and I send it to them. And, you know, the community gets bigger and bigger. It's that point is not so much about Tradition 1 and the common welfare, except how we interact with other 12-step organizations can affect the common welfare of AA. The common welfare is not just the 10-9 vote. These are all of these bigger things that we're thinking about. And by the way, for the next workshop in the concepts and substantiating anonymity, we don't want a 10-9 vote anyway. We want 2/3 of the body to decide on a vote. We don't want to be split down the middle. And here we go at the bottom of 98, just before we get to tradition two. And this talks a little bit about the self-sacrifice that I mentioned with respects to pride. Pride, and actually I want to go a couple lines before that. But like other societies, we soon found that there were forces among us that could threaten us in ways that alcohol and sex could not. These were desires for power, for domination, for glory, and for money. They were all the more dangerous because they were invariably powered by self-righteousness, self-justification, and the destructive power of anger, usually masquerading as righteous indignation. Followed by pride and fear and anger, these are the prime enemies of our common welfare. Now, you know me, or I don't know if you know me, but some of you know me. I'm always going to give it to you like it is. You're going to see right what I think on my shoulders. And I'm just telling you, I've been in AA over 25 years. I've been in the service structure for almost 24. And there is nothing more devastating than the urge for power and prestige. I've watched people put on a name badge and all of a sudden they think they're Superman. And another reason these traditions are so important, because when we have them, we don't allow that to happen. Yes, on an individual level, I've been an arrogant, cocky maniac, just like anyone else. But when we have these principles, we always have the opportunity to go back to being humble. We always have the opportunity to apologize. We're not going to elect the people that didn't answer our calls last term. We're not going to elect the people that allowed an email to go for 9 months. That's why these principles matter. Question, Brooke?
Yeah, got a couple more. So the first one is what you were saying just before. If a group doesn't appear to have guidelines, would a group inventory be a good place to start to move towards development of them?
I think there's a lot of places to start. Electing a GSR is a great one, because then you go to the district and you can consult all those other groups and see what they're doing. You can get connected with the district committee member and the DCM and then the area, and then you can get a huge perspective of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. You can get some literature that you may not have known was available. All of a sudden, get yourself a service sponsor. Oh my God, look at how much can happen by just opening the envelope. So that's one thing. But yes, a group inventory, the reason I didn't say that my first thought with respect to a start is I think a byproduct of a group inventory can certainly lead us to wanting to create guidelines. But you already know that. You don't need a group inventory for that. I think if you want to start to create guidelines, I think you want to consult other groups that have them. Just like you consult individual members of AA for their experience, strength, and hope. You want what your sponsor has. You like what the sober friends in your network have, your service sponsor. Well, I think from group to group, we literally have what's called country-to-country sponsorship. When you go into the Middle East or various different parts of the world, I mean, I love when an American comes back from the Dominican Republic and they're not even in the Dominican Republic. They're in some tiny little 2 square mile like resort, and they say they're in the Dominican Republic, but they come back to their American meeting and they raise their hand and they're like, oh my God, AA's everywhere. No, it's not. And it's not thriving everywhere. And you know, so like there's so much to know, so much to learn. So I think finding groups, having a GSR, asking what other groups are doing, reading a literature, I think that's more of the direction of how you want to, you know, create guidelines. The traditions are great guidelines. I mean, if you put a gun to my head and said, you have one wish for all groups in AA as far as guidelines, I would say the traditions. Because we could make various guidelines, such as how many years you should have sober. But if we follow these traditions, we're pretty solid. So to answer the question, I think a group inventory is always helpful. But practically speaking, with respects to specific guidelines, I think you can start by asking other groups what their experience is. And then don't forget, that connects to common welfare. Because what happens when someone calls you up and says, I'm really struggling today, I don't know how to get over this resentment? You grow. You feel like you have purpose. You've shared something you've gotten over. You've made a connection with someone. Well, that same local relationship happens when we work within the service structure.
Okay, I have another couple. So why is it not common to have an AA table at an NA convention and vice versa?
It's a great question. It's funny that it would be phrased, why is it not common? I think going back to what I stated earlier, and this is an interesting question because I don't have enough time to get into the philosophy of this, because we do cooperate with Narcotics Anonymous. I mean, we've invited them to share on panels at our international conventions, and they've invited us. And when I worked at the General Service Office and we had a day of sharing, we gathered shared experience with Narcotics Anonymous. So we do cooperate with Narcotics Anonymous. We do go to some of their things that come. But I think because of the thing regarding singleness of purpose and how confusing it is, and people like to combine drugs and alcohol, I think because of that, sometimes there's a separation. And I don't want to open up the door right now for what do you believe philosophically or what I believe philosophically. Should we not? But I think getting back to what I said earlier, there's a different kind of relationship with Al-Anon. Al-Anon was clearly, yes, SOA and NA and CA and all those came from, you know, AA and in some cases founders of AA. But there was really the whole movement of AA then created this idea of family groups so the family could use the 12 steps while the alcoholics were. And then so the Alateens could use them while the alcoholics were. And that was all about spiritual life. It wasn't even about whether or not someone was drinking, but that's all still based on AA. So I'll just end that question with this. I think you should ask that question at your district meeting or your area. And I think you should generate some discussion about that. I think it's a good discussion.
Okay, keeping on that whole line there, what do you say to a group called Double Winners, where they are both alcoholics and Al-Anon people, and they use both AA and Al-Anon literature, alternating weekly with the literature? Wouldn't this be confusing for a newcomer?
So what I would say is if you turn to page 563 of the big book and you turn to the long form of tradition 3, it says very clearly that any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. So I know certain entities in AA are scared to put their foot down. I know certain entities in AA are scared that the seven tradition funds may not come. It is my belief, it is my experience. When you tell a group, we cannot list you, we cannot acknowledge you, if you're unwilling to, you know, just be focused on AA, we're not telling the group what to do. In fact, we're telling the group what we're doing. So that whole argument of like, we don't have the right to tell the group what to do, that's not even what's happening. When we say that we cannot list you, you know, and there's advice, I mean, it's 848, I mean, I can't, but there's things called conference advisory actions, which talk about this. There's a history within AA with respects to dual purpose groups and stuff of that sort. So there's a long, long list of shared experience of why we don't do that and we don't recognize them as an AA group. And until our entities have the courage to put the principles before quote unquote seven tradition dollars, or until our entities have the courage to let go of what someone's going to think about them, it's going to continue to be a problem. And that's just my experience. Now, what would I say? I have experience with this both as a delegate, as a member working at the General Service Office, and just as an individual. I bring this information to them. I bring the shared experience of Alcoholics Anonymous traditions and our history and why we do that and what would they think. The only group that I've ever seen come even close to trying to give me an excuse, and I didn't have an immediate answer for, I'm not going to say the name of this state, especially because it's being recorded, but in one of the 50 states, this particular group was in a very remote, like I'm talking remote, remote area, and there was nothing else going on, so they wanted to combine AA and Al-Anon, and they worked together, and they did whatever. And this is why leadership, which is for another day, another discussion. So here's the razor's edge I'm trying to walk with you guys in this moment. The common welfare trumps the whole like leadership and compromising, right? But before we just throw the common welfare frisbee at someone's head, we want to take a minute and explore, wow, that's very interesting, because where I'm from, like there's 400 meetings, like, you don't have anything else out there. Why don't we start to have a discussion? Why don't we get you connected with some other remote parts of the country where they've done this before, where they at first started as an AA and an Al-Anon group and they realized that wasn't right. and they split off. Why don't you get connected with, you know, technology and get you connected with the organization of WSO and Al-Anon and then General Service Office and A, like bring solutions. It's another problem. If going back to the initial conversation we were having in the workshop, if you don't take the time to learn all this, you're not going to have a solution to give anybody. Just like before you work the steps, if somebody called you up and say, I don't know what to do about my boss, he's such a jerk. The best you can offer him is, yeah, my boss is a jerk too. We should quit. But once you go through the steps, you have something else to share. And it's the same thing with this. When you have experience with that, you start to find a way to connect with people. Just because we believe in our traditions and the common welfare doesn't mean we don't acknowledge. I mean, think about that for a second. I don't know everyone on the call here, but think about where you live and where you're from and how many groups are near you. But imagine there was nothing except one night a week. And because there were so few people, they just decided to make it A and Al-Anon to keep it open. It's a logical thought for somebody who's not informed. But that's our job, to help inform them, to help them understand why the common welfare works, to help us understand why we're separate. That's the job.
All right, I got one more. So what about the meeting that's part of a group that acts like a class, one or two leaders and assignments being given out?
What about the group that acts like a class, one or two leaders? Okay, got it. I mean, it doesn't sound like a group. Again, if the group conscience, so let's try to break this down. I only have a few minutes here, but you know, before you, when you look at the bottom of 98, before we go into tradition two, it says true brotherhood, harmony, and love, fortified by clear insights and right practices, are the only answers. What that's referring to is what I read before the questions, which was pride and fear and anger. These are the enemies of the common welfare. So brotherhood, harmony, love, fortified by clear insights, right practices are the only answers. And the purpose of A's principles is to bring these forces to the top to help bring common welfare to the forefront. The reason I read that to you is there's a couple of scenarios here, and if the groups decided that we are going to elect two people for 3 months at a time to read out of the book and share their experience and do all that kind of stuff, that's a very different scenario than one or two self-appointed leaders telling a group their interpretation of AA and how they must do it and how they should do it. And so again, I don't have enough information on that scenario, but I will throw out there, this is one of the first emails I give to like all of my new service sponsees with respects to Ireland. I don't know if anybody's from Ireland here, but years ago, Ireland decided not to recognize big book studies within their service structure. There was just way too many self-appointed leaders, individuals interpreting. You know, it's not the AA way to pick someone's sponsor for them. It's not the AA way for an entire group to hear the fifth step. And again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with reading the book together or a big book workshop. I'm just saying AA's experience, strength, and hope is one alcoholic sharing with another, that one-on-one personal relationship. So when you ask me, when I hear the word class, unless we're talking about there are no second-class citizens in AA, I despise that word in AA. I don't think there's any classes. I don't even like what I'm doing sometimes here because it feels too much like a class. That's why I'm always making sure that I say I'm just sharing my experience. Even if it's great, I still don't want it to be the, you know what I mean? And so we got to be careful of that. And I don't mean that in like a false humility. I mean that in a sincere way that we need to hear what everyone's saying. Because even if my experience is great, we still need to hear your experience. It's kind of like Voltron for those who grew up in my era. It kind of makes us get bigger and bigger, right? So I know I'm running out of time on the ticker here. So I get nervous when I hear the word class. But again, a group conscience could decide, like the group conscience decide to invite me here for a few weeks. A group conscience can decide to invite Brooke the week after. Those are two different things in my experience versus individuals, you know, controlling everything within the group. All right, so I think we have about 30 seconds, actually 10 seconds. Just give me 3 seconds, Bob. I just want to end with the last sentence here, reminding everyone, and the purpose of AA's traditional principles is to bring these forces, meaning brotherhood, harmony, love, to the top and keep them there. Only then can our common welfare be served. Only then can AA's unity become permanent. And we're looking for permanent sobriety, therefore permanent unity. Thanks for having me tonight.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.